This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. How do you measure a life well lived? It's a question that weighs heavily at critical moments as we consider taking a big risk or grapple with illness or face death. And for incarcerated men serving sentences on death row, the question is even more pressing. The play Count is a co-production of Hidden Voices and Playmakers Repertory Company. It brings to the stage the stories of six men who've been sentenced to die. It's a compilation of firsthand accounts from real men in prisons across the country, including some in North Carolina. Joining me now to talk about the piece is Lyndon Harris. She's the director of Hidden Voices, a nonprofit that brings personal stories to a public forum. Lyndon, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Always a delight. Thanks.
Also with us is Catherine Hunter-Williams, the director of Count and associate director for Hidden Voices. Kathy, good to have you back as well.
Thanks. Good to see you.
Lyndon, talk about this performance and really how this whole series came about.
Sure. The play, as you said, is a compilation of a whole lot of stories from men across the country. And one of the things we wanted to do was be able to include sort of really a geographic base, different ages, different ethnic backgrounds, and give an insight into really who lives on death row in this country. Because who lives on death row is folks who are poor, folks who have mental illness, minority, racial and ethnic minorities are overly represented. So we wanted to bring that in a sort of a setting where all the characters are fictional, but all the stories are actually true.
And how did you get those true stories?
Well, a lot of different ways. We put a request out to a number of magazines and newspapers that go to prisons around the country. And we sent out different prompts asking folks to respond to us with letters or phone calls. You know, it depends on different death rows in the country as to, like some men are in segregation 23 hours a day, but they have phones. So they could call. There are other folks who aren't in segregation, but they don't have phone access, so they sent letters. So over the years that we worked on this, we got pretty close with a lot of the guys. There were about, I think, almost 70 who participated in this.
Once you get the story, then are you in communication to the best that you can? In other words, how do you compile these stories and turn them into flesh and blood on a stage?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting process. The first thing we did was create a series of monologues. And so we would craft those and then send them back for the guys to read and see if we actually had captured what it was they were saying. Some of them are composite stories because, of course, you see over and over again, you know, family abuse, violence, drugs, racism, those, you know, educational failures. So a lot of the same stories pop up. And so we were able to sort of create these composite characters because of that.
What were the prompts?
Well, the most recent one I remember was asking them, what gets you through the day? Are there prayers, inspirational quotes, moments? You know, how do you reflect on your life? So that was actually the most recent prompt that went out.
Now, Kathy, for this production, you've decided to recruit professional actors, mm-hmm. right, who are going to try to embody these stories. But I understand that you directed a very special production for a similar play when you actually got inside prison. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, we had a chance when we were working with some of the men, because we've worked in various prisons in North Carolina, but one of the experiences we had with some of the men, the group we were working with, they actually created a performance in which they were able to, it's not the play that we're doing right now, but was a piece that was specifically geared for them and their experiences. And they got a chance to perform it on the inside with for their fellow inmates and their fellow and some of their administrative people and other supportive people in the prison. And it was an incredible experience to watch these men, of course, none of whom had any kind of theatrical experience, but to be able to be brave enough to bring these words to life, to stand up and open themselves up to their communities and share parts of them that I'm sure their fellow prisoners had not seen or heard of. And as a director, it was very surreal because they did an amazing job. Mm. They gave me credit, but to tell you the truth, they really did a great job themselves.
They're performing for inmates and also staff, right?
Yes, it was.
Well, that must have been surreal to watch the staff watch these reflections that perhaps aren't quite so vividly portrayed in day-to-day life in prison.
It was probably one of the most meta-theatrical experiences I have ever had, to stand there inside of the actual setting where these stories take place and to watch these men perform these stories for their fellow inmates and for the administration. And I think I spent almost as much time watching the performance as I did watching the audience.
Imagine.
Because the, you know, we firmly believe with Hidden Voices and with our theatrical work that stories can really facilitate change. They can change people when you start to look at people as individuals and you really see the humanity with each person. Your generalizations kind of disappear and your understanding and empathy for people comes about. I felt a real palatable change in that room that day. I just felt that people, we had a moment where for an hour, there was a vulnerability in the room and people opened up and really got to see parts of each other that they normally wouldn't. So it was pretty great.
Well, I can only, I mean, it's the paradox of theater, right? That we're going to use this trope, this kind of artifice to create an environment through which the truth can be told. Now, if you think about the rest of us going through our day-to-day lives, mostly trying to conceal ourselves in any milieu, in any setting, we're really trying to shade the truth about ourselves. But I would think in prison that imperative, the need to become a particular individual and to replay that individual over and over is particularly important. So then to turn things around and to have it be about vulnerability in a fiction setting, yeah, you've just blown my mind.
Exactly. And of course, because as Lyndon said, as we found with all of the men that we've worked with and all of the stories that we've collected, there is a common thread that runs through each of these stories. There is race, there is poverty, there is, you know, the institutions that fail them at various steps of their lives. So even though we were telling one particular set of stories, I think everybody in that room could see themselves in those stories. So as each of these men spoke their truths, everyone in that room felt like they were being represented. And that's the power of what we do at Hidden Voices. That's the power of, you know, bringing these underrepresented voices into a public forum to facilitate change. And it was really great to just watch it happen.
Now, as you point out, that is not count what you're what we've been talking about. So now let me ask you as a director, what is it like to experience that kind of power in the mouths of those whose stories it is, and then work with professional actors to try to get something like the same experience?
Oh, that's such a great question, because it reminds me that that what we have to do as actors is to really honor not only the truth of what the stories that we've collected, the basic truths of what they're saying, but also to honor their way of processing it. So we are very careful to relate their stories in a truthful and honest way and to share with the audience what they have discovered. So we don't want to sort of sentimentalize it or sort of wallow in the emotion of it. But we're really looking at the question that Lyndon and I have asked is, how do the guilty live? How do you go on every single day in this environment where you are mandated by the state to have your life end? You are sometimes on death row for 15, 20, 25, 30 years. You have created there is a community that you live with. And so how do you choose to spend that time? So we want to honor their insights, their truths, their humor, their discoveries. And that's where the actors, that's how we're working on bringing these stories to life.
Well, let's talk to some of the actors whose job it is to do just that. Years of correspondence with death row prisoners and inmates went into the development of the upcoming performance of Count. We can talk a bit more about that. Joining me in the studio is Chris Berry, who plays the role of Kansas City in Count. Chris, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. And Brian D. Coates plays the role of Long Beach. Hello, Brian.
Hello, sir.
Chris, tell me a little bit more about Long Beach.
Kansas City.
Kansas City, right.
So Kansas City is a biracial man, young man, 26 years old, obviously from Kansas City. He's Mexican and black, and he's dealt with the loss of a father early in his life. And then he's also dealing with the fact that he is a young father and is not with his child. And I think that's the biggest thing that tears him apart, of not having the connection to his father and then continuing that cycle and then in turn not being there for his son. So that's one of the most interesting things to pull apart when it comes to the role of Kansas City.
And Brian, you are playing Long Beach. Tell us more about Long Beach.
Yes, Long Beach is one of the oldest members, of the group on stage, and he has a great amount of experience. He's experienced being at death door. He was on death watch and was scheduled to die, and it was overturned. So he has a special story. He's actually holding on to a secret. I kind of want to keep it a secret. So, you know, for the sake of the audience who wants to come. But it's a nice dramatic turn in the play that.
Well, I'd like you. Could you do a scene for us now?
Sure thing.
Surely.
Long Beach. I come from the cliffs over Sunset Beach. Warm quiche Lorraine and my mother's knitting needles. I belong to my son's big chestnut eyes, being the only black family in town, and stay in the closet. I come from secondhand smoke, suffocating sheets, and all black people talk jive. One thing I know, love is the greatest power on earth, and I am my prayer beads worn, used, tried, and tested.
Kansas City. I come from the playground littered with crack pipes and bullet shells, a small beige bedroom my family shared, and spicy tamales. I belong to my sister's mocha skin, the blowtorch that burned our trailer to the ground, and quieres una pela pa que esa merda se pare. I come from credit at the corner store, seeing colors in the shadow, and go back to Mexico where you belong. One thing I know for sure, everybody wants heaven, but don't nobody want to die. And I'm a blank sheet of paper with infinite potential for the future.
Actors Brian D. Coates playing the role of Long Beach and actor Chris Berry playing the role of Kansas City. The play is Count, on stage at the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill's Kenan Theater from August 23rd through the 27th. Brian, tell us more about the dynamic then between these two characters.
Between Long Beach and Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Well, Long Beach is close to me in proximity as far as our cells. And so he's someone who I can confide in easier than I can with the others.
Yeah, I would say that Kansas City is the newest of the group in regards to the inmates. And from what I'm gathering, it's easier to have that dynamic initially because there's less history. Funny enough that there's less history with Long Beach, so you can bond a little quicker juxtaposed to the history that other people have. So I think he's privy to some information that will keep a secret.
We all have to go to the show to find out. There's an important dynamic. And I think since I'm aware of this, it will be interesting to an audience to know that this is even a thing, that this would be a dramatic turn, and that could be something that would make things more difficult. Lyndon, let me ask you about the because these are composite stories, so the characters themselves are not one particular individual, and then you have to put them on the stage and respond. How do you go about putting all of this together?
I wish I knew. it's a big challenge. We had thousands of pages of material, lots and lots of recorded conversations. And so I think, you know, it's part of what we do is start looking for all of the stories that are about drug use at a really young age, and all of the stories that are about family violence, and all the stories about what happened at school and school suspensions. So, you know, this project kind of came out of our work on the school to prison pipeline. It was sort of like a natural outgrowth. So we definitely had a bullet point list of topics that had come up in so many men's lives that we wanted to make sure we share those stories somewhere. So that's what we did. You know, we start out with color coding all of those different pieces and cutting them together with scissors and tape.
Kathy, then the challenge, it seems to me, is turning this into actual theater. These are compelling stories, and they are riveting insights into a social penal system that is utterly failing to serve us all. It does that, but how do we make that theater? What do you go into this with thinking?
Well, one of the ways we decided to frame the play was that we would frame it as one day on death row. So we're using a series of sort of the intercom calls that come throughout the day to mark the progression of a day. And it is a special day, and we use that as a way to get the audience to understand the rhythm of these men's lives, the interactions that they have, and give a little bit of insight into what that kind of daily prison routine is like. The other thing that we do to make it, I think that's the fun of making it a theatrical piece, is that we get to go back and forth between the men's everyday existence and then these stories and memories and shared stories that they have together. So within that, we get to see a little bit of how, when you are imprisoned like this, what your imagination and how your mental state really helps to take care of you. So we see how that bonds them maybe sometimes gives a little friction, sometimes maybe pulls them apart a little bit. But really, that creativity, that imagination, that storytelling, and then the ability to take those stories and use that as a way to reexamine your life. These men are at a point, of course, where they have nothing but the time to really reflect and to think about their lives, their choices, society. And so they have this greater understanding. It's a way of sort of choosing how to do their time in a way that gives their life meaning.
I wonder, Brian, Chris, could you do another scene for us? Maybe you could help set it up if it needs it.
I knew his rule. Never carry more than two joints unless you're doing business. So I grabbed a full ounce. We headed out to meet Pop's crew. They trusted me to carry and receive.
They trusted me even though I had no clue what I was doing. See, I didn't get hands-on with drugs till late, maybe 13. But this was the first time my people had ever been short on rent. I knew I had to do something.
They knew their stuff. My dad was in the Navy and his crew was tight. If I got caught, no sir, officer, I just found these drugs and was on my way to the police.
But when you know the police gonna padlock the place you call home? So I had an idea. Honest, hard-working persons they were. They didn't like it one bit, but they took a chance.
There was a good chance the park would mean a morning of socializing. In other words, Pops would be smoking, drinking, and selling while I washed his car. Whatever. Weekends, the park was alive with chess and the music of Bones.
I had a weekend to flip 300 of their honest dollars to 7 and change. How hard could it be? I knew where to buy drugs. I knew where to sell drugs. Only thing I didn't know was how to buy and sell drugs.
I noticed Pop studying me. He could see I had a full bag. That's when a brother strode up. I don't know you, but you're welcome to roll out of the bag.
I rolled out of bed Saturday and didn't stop till Monday morning when I crawled back to my people so exhausted I could hardly move. I handed them the crumpled paper sack. I'm sorry. I was $40 short. They said they appreciated me trying.
He didn't exactly appreciate the offer to roll. Instantly, I was on my knees, cuffed, then yanked to my feet. Pops left without even looking at me.
The sheriff hardly looked at us. Him and the landlord seemed pleased. They gave my peoples 30 minutes to leave. Pendejos.
Cops seemed pretty pleased with an ounce bus. We only drove a block when the cops stopped our car and climbed out. Huh? Pops was telling them something, but what?
My peoples told me it wasn't my fault, but all I could see was the padlock, dude, and my mistake from the weekend.
I was mistaken about the cops. They were shore patrol officers, some of Pops' crew. I'd been had, fine. No more rolling out a bag for me, and be careful who you trust. Lessons learned.
It was a hard lesson, believe me. There was mistakes I never made again.
For 3 years, I learned from Pops and his crew till I was street ready.
After that, I hit the streets myself, helping mom pay for rent, buying my own gear.
At 14, I broke out on my own.
At 14, I was grown.
Chris Berry performing the character of Kansas City, Brian D. Coates playing the role of Long Beach. They are in the play Count on stage at the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill's Keenan Theater from August 23rd to the 27th. Lyndon, we've heard a lot about, of course, people who are innocent on death row. This is not. You have deliberately chosen people who have acknowledged their guilt. Why?
Well, it's an important topic working, you know, people who are innocent and have been convicted of crimes they didn't commit. And we have worked with those folks. We have worked with folks who were later exonerated. But in this situation, we did feel like that had been addressed theatrically, and we felt like this really hadn't. And so, like Kathy said, the question of how do you live as a guilty person? What do you do with that remorse, that regret? How does it shape your life? And that was what we really wanted to look at.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Lyndon Harris is the director of Hidden Voices. It's a nonprofit that brings personal stories to public forums. He's also the playwright behind Count. Catherine Hunter Williams is the director of Count and associate director of Hidden Voices. Chris Berry plays the role of Kansas City in Count. Brian D. Coates plays the role of Long Beach. I want to thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The play Count is a co-production of Hidden Voices and Playmakers Repertory Company on stage at North Carolina Chapel Hill's University of North Carolina Chapel Hill's Keenan Theater, August 23rd to the 27th. Of course, we've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a group of young journalists talk about their experience with WUNC's Youth Reporting Institute. You'll hear that in a minute on The State of Things.